Greetings, fellow investigators, and welcome back to our video podcast, Into the Darkness, where my friends and I play the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I'm your host, Tom Rayleigh. Our campaign is Horror on the Orient Express, and this is episode 57. I'm your game master, and Jeff Wilkins will be giving our recap. The train is chugging along. The players are ready. Let's begin our journey into the darkness. Jeff.
Thanks, Tom. The current date is February 9th, 1923. Our investigators are on board the Orient Express. We're headed towards Belgrade, with a scheduled arrival of 12:53 p.m. in the afternoon. We just left the city of Vinkovci after having found the stolen, or after having found and, quote, stolen back the mysterious knife known as the Mime Sahis. It was being used by a man named Dr. Bellanzada, who was using the knife to create these animal-human hybrids. His intent may have started with good intents, but helping the war veterans regain limbs, but it's clear the knife had somehow corrupted his mind and turned things to a darker side. While on the train, Dr. Keith had read through the book called the Narito Deltilius Corvus, of which we role-played out that scenario set in Roman times of 330 AD. In the previous episode, we learned the knife was used by an evil cultist leader to somehow create an army of dark magical creatures out of dead skins of humans. It may have also been the cause of a horrible plague. The Roman elite fighting unit was able to successfully defend the military outpost from the assault of the undead army, and also successfully tracked down the leader of the cult to a strange pit up in the mountains. The story did have its fantastical moments, which we are now questioning what, if anything, from the story is real or not. We rejoin our investigators still in search of the Sedevkar Simulacrum statue pieces. Still missing is the right arm, the head. I think just those two pieces. We are also in search of the missing scrolls, of which only one has been found so far in relation to the head. The scrolls, we think, will teach us how to destroy the statue piece. That brings us up to date.
Excellent. So you guys are all on the train, and you have just closed the Narratio Deltilius Corvus.
I don't know about you chaps, but I fancy a brandy and cigar after walking our way through that.
Certainly is fantasyful.
I sure look as Holmes said, I think it's a two-pipe problem. What a towel. What a towel. And a chap of Centurion, chap was possessed by him when he was killed as well. And carried on and married, and then killed everybody on the barge. Makes me wonder, if we do come across this skinning chap, and we have to do him, how do we know he isn't or possessed one of us?
Good question.
Oh boy. If he could be, maybe, if we could use the occult to our benefit, maybe.
Well, I believe we actually discussed this earlier, that we should try and get to know each other as best we can, so that way, if we fear that someone's become someone else, we can ask a question that only we as a group would know. We'll come up with a code word. I'm pretty sure we did come up with a code word, actually.
Oh, definitely. I think we've all been through, we all know each other quite well in the past week or so. We've seen many sides of each other.
I think, wasn't it? That's going to be the trouble. We're going to have to remember the code word.
I can't remember the code word.
I think, wasn't it like meatball sub or something?
That's what I was thinking.
just say maestros.
Maestros.
Where do you get the best meatball subs on the East Coast? Oh, maestros. All right, you're not possessed. Okay. That could be the code word, meatball subs.
The place we're going to is probably the most fought over city in medieval history. And it's got a very high Turkish population as well. And considering people with fezes are trying to kill us, there's going to be make it very hard for us to notice them, because there's going to be a lot of fez wearers around it.
Well, luckily we're moving into areas where I can at least communicate with people with relative ease.
And we show that.
So we'll no longer need to kind of guess what people are saying now that Vigo's gone and we moved out of the Italian regions.
Wizard. Absolutely wizard. You can speak about that.
What time is it now, Tom? You've been reading for hours, right?
Yes, it is. It's about 10 o'clock. Maybe
in the evening?
Morning.
Okay.
It's morning. Should we adjourn to the dining cart and get something to eat? Yeah. At the same time, let's sort through this.
Yes, there's much to discuss.
Nicely translated as well, Becky. Nicely done.
Thank you very much.
You kind of rushed out of there,
didn't you? Could do Latin, but not as well as Dr. Keith Wilson. What a great job on that.
Are you heading to the dining car then?
Yes.
Be careful not to seat ourselves too near prying ears. It would be nice to have a relative.
Yeah, there are quite a few people on board the.
I'm sure if we keep that train the tone down, no one will overhear us for the evening. Anyway,
the one that stands out the most on the train right now is there is a rather plump woman with a child of maybe 7 who won't shut up and is annoying and cries and makes noise and kicks people. And she's just, it's just extremely unpleasant with this child on board. So wherever he is, you avoid.
Gentlemen.
Throw him off the train.
I suppose I should ask, is anyone else a little concerned that we haven't gotten any other scroll? We've managed to get all the pieces, but we haven't found any scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they'd probably come together as a job lot, old boy. You know what I mean? But now you mention it, it is a quite uncanny.
We did find one, I believe.
Yeah, I believe we have one, didn't we?
We found one in Milan, I'm pretty sure.
The one, wasn't it in...
Yeah, hopefully we haven't overlooked something and left it behind.
Yeah.
That's what I'm worried about.
And me. That's the trouble of being on a train journey. Even though it's at our convenience, the fact we might move on too soon before we get the final clue.
You might want to check your original notes.
Something we'll have to go back over, but I know we have one note. We have one of the pieces.
It's the one we found in the taxidermy bear, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the nightmare realm, as I'll call it.
Yeah.
It's just I'm a little worried that we're that. While we're getting the pieces, they're getting the papers. Does anyone else have that worry, or is it just me being paranoid again? And I kind of give a slight smile.
I think paranoia is a healthy emotion at the moment, old chap. I mean, my biggest paranoia is us running around getting all the pieces, and then them coming along, clubbing us on the head and taking all our hard work without having to do any of themselves.
That's also something I've thought about.
But paranoia, if you weren't paranoid, old chap, I'd be worried because that's become a clear friend of mine in the past week or so.
I thought exactly.
We really don't know much about this. Sorry.
No, go on.
I was going to say, we don't really know much about the scrolls either.
These are occult type books we did find with it, obviously. Would they be any benefit in our battle?
Maybe.
To actually go through such a thing is going to take a frightfully long time. War's probably going to be over by then, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And this is when the Eldritch paranoia truly comes out, because he leans forward and he says, "Do you find it kind of odd that we're collecting all these pieces and then we're taking it to the exact place that these people want it to be?"
We have to take it to destroy it, don't we? That's something.
But we don't 100% know that. We don't.
I admit the only reason I know is because you told me, old chap.
I take out the folded piece of paper that was originally from Beddoes, from Smythe.
No relation.
I'll skip the... no relation. I'll skip the... At the very end, it says, "The only sure way to destroy the statue is in its original home, a place in Constantinople known as the Shunned Mosque. A ritual to destroy it utterly is included in a set of documents known as the Sedevkar Scrolls."
Smythe was burned rather badly, wasn't he, Tom?
Yes.
Like, unrecognizable?
Well, yes and no. I mean, his beard and facial hair was all gone, but it still looked like him.
But burned or skinned? Because skinned can look burned. Similar to burned, unless you have to see.
So was Beddoes, but not as badly.
That's kind of what I'm wondering, is that maybe these people can change faces.
Or possess. Like that centurion got possessed and killed everyone at the wedding. Everyone thought they'd killed the guy. But somehow he's transformed his spirit into the centurion and took him over. And he was able to mask it, and nobody obviously realized until the wedding. And there'd been quite a few days gone past.
And I nod in response.
Some of the occult magic, maybe you might be able to, like I say, if we can find something that might give us something to protect us from such possession, if anything exists. But usually, when it comes to things like the occult, I mean, for every curse is an anti-curse, isn't there? An antidote for it, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. What if he wasn't possessed?
He's got to have a yang. Well, he took him over, didn't he? By the looks of it, he started slaughtering everybody in the web, including his companions.
Yeah. So, did I understand you right then? Did you mean like another entity possessed him, or did you just mean?
I think that the skinning guy, like who was fought in the other book, very similar. And I think when they killed him, it was the centurion killed him, didn't he? I think when the centurion killed him, the bad guy's spirit took over the centurion. Because then the centurion went around and murdered everybody at the wedding, but only when the time was right and everybody was gathered. So therefore, he knew how to play a part.
But historically, this is the first, if you will, installment of the story.
Yes, the other one would have been later.
I mean, I suppose you could read it two ways, couldn't you? It could either be that he is some sort of external force occupying the body of some of various people through history, or could it be that it's just one person, and that this is how he came about or something? I mean, I don't know. If it can warp reality and it can animate corpses, surely it could stop a body from rotting, couldn't it?
It seems to be able to. I mean, I was wondering, I'm just glad that we managed to get hold of that blade without getting into a fight with that guy, because one of us could be possessed now. Yeah,
I'm just thinking that it said in the book that the bodies didn't rot or decay, the ones skinned.
And the ones we saw, he'd melded animal parts to human bodies without it being rejected at all. And we couldn't even find the stitch marks, could we? It was like a smooth join, this magical blade he used. So it seems to be capable of all sorts. I know when one of those soldiers got hit with it, he went down like a sack, didn't he?
What if it's not an entity, though, but just that the knife itself corrupts a person's soul?
Possible.
It's
likely as anything else.
Right.
I think he may know a few occult rituals. And now there's that new side to the occult we've all become aware of, but we're all totally ignorant of a few years ago. It throws a complete spanner in the works, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. What were you going to say there, Dr. Dawkins?
No, I was just going to say that we should definitely investigate the properties of this particular knife. I mean, not use it, but perhaps somehow, some way, investigate its properties. Perhaps there's more information about it in Constantinople.
How many
do
more?
Do any of us know any rituals or spells that could do such a thing?
Well, I don't know, but if there's going to be some sort of information, it would definitely be, I would think, in a library somewhere there.
Belgrade has got an old castle. I was wondering about that place.
It also has two major libraries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big fortress. The only building the city older than 1830. Built in the 1400s and finally occupied by Turks in 1867. The upper part is a prison, an army museum. All sorts. There's going to be plenty of us to do in Belgrade when we get there. Stay away from the Hotel of Europa. That's meant to be quite nice. On the southern bank of the Danube.
Yeah, that sounds good.
The station's on the south side, I believe. Mm-hmm. Royal Palace. The northeast side is the Turkish Quarter, around the base of the citadel. Always a little steam bath there. I'll be tempted to go there. Do like a steam bath. Makes me feel Roman.
The clue in relation to Belgrade says there may be a peace in the kingdom of Serbs, Croats, and Slovenes. Start at the National Museum of Belgrade. Dr. Milovan Todorovic is the curator. I know his name has come up before.
Yeah, with my gold artifact collection of mines. Admission free daily 9 to 12 midday, and then 3 to 5. At least we've got a name to go by.
Your food is brought to you, and coffee and whatever.
Thanks awfully. Quite an appetite.
You can hear the brat in the other down the train making noise, and I want this and I want that. And his mom's like, "It's whoopsie."
I'm going to strike a conversation with the lady or the child to find out what hotel she's staying at, so I can make sure that we don't, because there's a choice of hotels here. There's the Hotel Europa, which is absolutely fantastic from what I heard. There's the Moskva and the Petrograd. So hopefully she won't be staying at the Europa.
All right. Your conversation from her is rather short. She's well-dressed, but she looks like she hasn't slept in a while, thanks to the brat. Yeah. She is not stopping in Belgrade. She's continuing on.
Oh, unfortunate. Oh, well. Get back to my companions after a pleasant conversation. Thank God for that. She's not staying in Belgrade.
Seems a trifle excessive, taking a child on the Friend Express.
And bring him into a dining car, and he's got that sort of manners.
Do I see anybody like else complaining about the kid?
You don't have to do a perception or a spot hidden or anything. You can tell that everybody is annoyed by this kid. Eyes roll. People visibly avoid being anywhere near. They'll actually get up from their seats and change seats.
That's bad, Dave. Bad.
What about somebody that seems to sort of be oblivious to this? This whole experience? Anybody like that?
Well, there's people who are, I guess they're conflicted with being polite. So you imagine that they're probably sitting there reading or smiling or whatever, and they're probably just not getting up because they're too polite to do it.
What local laws like in regard to murder?
It's a thing that happens. You know, people are annoying, or at least some children are annoying.
Having this special carpool, it put me off my beef.
When we get to Belgrade, are we going to have to worry about black shirts still?
No, that's Italy. This is
that's a bring out.
This is Yugoslavia. That's a bring out. This is different country.
Couldn't keep quiet. That's a bring out.
Do we have to worry about something of its equivalence? Like maybe the...
Well, you've already run into the problems between the Serbs and the Croats. That's still there.
Okay.
City is predominantly Serbian. I mean, there's more Serbs than you're going to encounter anybody else. But, you know, I mean, it's there. It's not like they're against anybody else. The Serbs and the Croats have a long-standing fight with one another. The most you'll have is probably a language barrier. Eldridge knows Russian, and probably a lot of them know Russian. A lot of them probably know English, too. But you're going to encounter a lot of them who don't know either.
Well, a lot of them are also familiar with German, correct?
That's correct. Yes, you're right in the melting pot of Europe. Every language is going to be spoken there by somebody.
Yeah. So there's no real. I can, if they can't speak English, I can translate. So that won't be a big deal.
Right.
Just reading, like if we go to a library.
You're also Belgrade. You know, I don't know what. You know, you might have in your minds, you are going into wilder country, but Belgrade is a modern city. The king of Belgrade wants everything modern. I believe that I'm not sure my dates on this, but I know that at some point he had the entire palace torn down and rebuilt into a modern, you know, building. So you're going to find, you know, hot and cold running water and plumbing and beautiful pavement. This is an ancient Roman city that's now a modern city.
Okay.
I would have shown you a picture of the library when you get there, but I think the library is now this gigantic silver you know, geodesic dome thing. So it's not the beautiful classic building that it used to be.
Okay.
Another building that Frank Gehry got to. I wish there was some way we could find out more information about this skinless cult. If they've been around since 330 AD and they're still around now, are they that good at hiding?
Maybe.
Seems like a job for rather a specialist library, though.
Yeah, either that or the people who know about them aren't around anymore. As it
well, and
their skin.
Not to mention, but all the books that we've seemed to come across are literally one of a kind. We may not be able to find anything on the Skinless Cult unless it's like a genuine first or second edition version of something.
Well, yes, until the printing press, almost all of your books are going to be one of a kind. Unless, yeah, you know, they're handwritten copies, they're still going to be extremely rare.
Who knows how expensive Tilius Corvus is?
Yeah.
Like, this is, it's handwritten, correct? It's 100% genuine, this is the original?
Correct.
Oh, yeah. I've got an appraisal skip if it comes to value in anything like that.
I mean, as an editor, I can tell you it's priceless, automatically.
Yeah, all appraisal has to be based on its value compared to other things. And when you're dealing with something like Tilius Corvus, it's priceless. There's no, you can't compare it to anything. And it's illuminated manuscript, so.
Yeah. And it's a first edition in good condition.
Yeah. It's the only edition as far as anybody knows.
Yeah. So... This could fetch an enormous price, but the fact of the matter is I don't think we're going to find anything in a library about the cult.
You also have
too valuable to sell, really.
You also have La Magine del Diavolo.
Yes,
which is another one of a kind.
Yep.
What languages have they written in?
La Magine del Diavolo is in Latin. Yeah, they're both in Latin.
Yeah, I could tackle one of them because I've got Latin if a need be, Kane.
Although one is an older Latin, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Magine del Diavolo is almost Venetian. Actually, I think it was Venetian, but it's almost Latin.
It would literally take months to translate.
You have two other books, too, that are probably one of a kind, but they're far more difficult to translate. They'll take you months and months.
Yeah.
You also ran across in, I think it was Vincosi, there was a bookseller that deals in rare books. So when it comes down to it, if you were going to pursue that, you could probably go there and have them find a buyer for it, and they would be able to do that.
It's a knowledge that's contained in the books. It's dangerous, isn't it?
Dr. Keith, do you know of a particular... what's the word I'm looking for? An official... someone who studies cults. So, like, not necessarily the occult, like witches and things like that, but somebody more along an academic, that's the word I was thinking, more along.
It would be the preserve of anthropologists. What I believe are called cultural anthropologists in the United States.
I wonder, do you have any contacts that you could reach out to?
I have. There are certainly people at Miskatonic in the anthropology department I could attempt to contact. Why?
Because it seems like everything we've tried to find, we just hit dead end after dead end. I mean, if it's a cult, they need to recruit members, right? There's got to be some form of... How do you find new members? How do you join something that doesn't exist?
Frank, do an idea roll.
Ooh. I'm ready for all skill tests and combat today. Yes, I barely passed.
Okay. So let's say you can have dice with ones on everything, on all sides. All right. When you think about it in your head, you've encountered this cult in various parts of Europe. It seems there's kind of like cells in different areas. And when you think back to, I believe it was Milan, you had the very wealthy, prominent people such as Arturo Faccia, who was apparently a leader in that cult. And the one that you had encountered upstairs in his room, whose lungs had been replaced, was also very wealthy, and he seemed to be a new follower. So perhaps they recruit by saying, hey, you have tuberculosis, we can fix that for you, and then you could become a devotee because we can fix that for you. We have powers. Do you want to know more? You've encountered characters like, what the hell was his name? The Duc de Zassant, who they seem to be obsessed with magic. And that's, you know, they're always looking for people who are also obsessed with magic and then say, you know, okay, I'll show you something. So that's probably the way they're recruiting, is slowly but surely.
Okay, yeah.
And they're also probably breeding and producing children, which they just immediately pull into the sect as well. So give that 2,000 years and...
Right, okay, I see.
Now, just assuming you're pointing that out to us, right? I can't help but think that this business of people being cured of diseases by the cult, being given new lungs, things like that, I find that in a way answers my previous question. About whether or not we're dealing with the potential of someone living for hundreds, if not thousands of years, because surely if you have access to this magic, that the heart
and
of this cult...
And if you can transfer bodies, that makes it very possible, doesn't it?
If it's someone who's in a very high, if not the highest position in the cult, then surely he's going to have access to all of their knowledge. And if he has access to all of their knowledge, then surely if any part of his body fails, he can replace it as and when necessary. If he becomes old, he can simply take the skin of someone younger. Yeah. Someone at the heart of this cult could conceivably live forever.
Yeah.
So what I'm wondering is are we dealing with an entity possessing people, or are we dealing with a cult leader or some avatar of something who's been alive for over 1,000 years, 1,500 years or something?
both the Tarnus Apatarnus running a cult. I mean, if he lives forever, technically, in some ways, it makes him look godlike, which qualifies him to build a cult and have people following him, so to speak.
Yeah.
So where that knowledge originally comes from is anyone's guess.
Well, I suppose like a lot of things like that, there's an inner circle that knows the truth, and the further away from the circle you are, the less you know.
Mm.
Yeah, what motivates this cult? What are they trying to do?
Impress this person that lives forever, and maybe he can give him the secret. The carrot on the stick, immortality. What human isn't going to be tempted?
Wealth, political power.
Well, wealth definitely helps, doesn't it?
There was an altar of sorts, wasn't there, in the Imaginative Diablo. There was a sort of a kind of altar or a votive image that was made of skins stitched together.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Like there's another higher power of some sort behind it.
Well, perhaps there's some greater deity or something involved, because usually in these cults, they believe that they're drawing energy from somewhere, don't they?
Or try to bring something back.
But there's some element. Usually cults have some element of worship.
Oh, definitely.
Supplication.
I mean, like I say, if he's got this immortal gift, if he's able to maybe make some other people in the inner circle immortal alongside him, I mean, that'd be quite a strong cult.
And like not only that, but if he's immortal, he's had, or seemingly immortal, he's had a long time to plan this out. Which means we could just be playing a finish in a chess.
Oh yeah, we could be puppets. We could be doing all his hard work for him.
Which is why I brought up, have we really thought about why we're bringing everything to the location where it was first made? Doesn't that seem a little convenient?
It sounds very occult. Like, when you look at the sort of occult items, it sounds like the sort of thing that would have to be done to destroy them.
You have to take it back to where it was created to destroy it.
Yeah, so it seems very occult-like, so to speak.
How such a thing would be created is... I don't understand.
I mean, our society has probably come across such legends before. Those sort of legends seem to exist wherever you go in the world.
Yeah, but from what we've been seeing, it seems to me it's a little convenient that it's almost...
Well, we have no choice. We have to do it.
Well, it just seems literally stereotypical. Like, you need to take the object back to where it was first made to destroy it. Everything that we've come across doesn't really fit within that mythos or legend archetype. It's just been stuff, you know? Stuff just happens. Well,
someone went to great length to scatter the parts to make sure nobody could do that.
I don't know. I'm feeling a little uneasy. The closer we get to Constantinople, that we're just playing...
Catch-22 situation, we have to do it. We can't turn our back on this evil. If we walked away now and left everything, we wouldn't be able to live with ourselves. So we're kind of doomed to carry on, even though we know we're damned in doing so to speak, because there's nobody else who will do it, is there? Well, and if we don't do something, this cult could probably go on for hundreds of more years.
Just like, it just feels to me like we're in the end game here and we're playing right into their hand. And I'm just going to slump into the chair.
It's definitely a very serious game of chess we're playing. With very high stakes.
Are you, Aldrich, are you
are you hinting to the fact that you don't necessarily trust Smythe?
Yes.
Okay.
They were already there, because if you remember correctly, I don't think I ever told you, but the night of the big reveal that there's a world beyond our own and that we have proof, there was a Turkish man there. And he had a fez on, and when I approached him, he just kind of rushed away. And I have a nagging, it's just a gut feeling, but I feel like the house burning down was part one, and part two was the assimilation of Smythe and this imposter telling us, oh, get all these pieces and put them together. Hmm. It seems awfully convenient. Mm-hmm. And it may not be Smythe, it may be Beddoes. You know, Beddoes is the one that we've been talking with the majority of the time, correct?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, if they have the ability to meld animal body parts onto the human body without issue and have it come to life and act, what's stopping them from taking over the head of the Arcane Society and giving us this mission saying, oh, do it to help humanity, but in reality we're doing exactly what they want, which is why we've had no resistance.
Well, unfortunately, if we get the situation where we do get one of us possessed by this person, we're going to have to kill them. This is going to be a very difficult thing, but we're going to have to remember if they're possessed, they're not the person we used to know, so to speak. But, yeah, I think that's a big danger for us.
I don't know. Frank, you're the one that kind of caught on to what I was implying, so tell me that I'm acting crazy to suspect Smythe.
No, I mean, what you're saying is logical. I never crossed my mind, and I don't want to believe it, but I can't find a fault in the argument either.
I haven't met the chap, have I, so I can't really say much about him.
Well, he's your uncle.
Oh, I see. Well, I think what we should do when we get to the station is maybe go to the telegraph office and see if we hear anything from Blighty.
You know,
because we're told not to contact them, but they can contact us.
You know, Eldridge, I think you might have a point there. I mean, the Skinless Cult doesn't seem like their motto is to burn down a house and leave somebody alive. You know, their motto is to skin somebody.
Exactly.
And we didn't actually see the face of Smythe. He was wrapped up in bandages, if I remember this correctly. It's been a while.
No, you saw his face. He was severely burned. His facial hair was all burned off.
Well, yeah,
third degree blisters and everything on his face.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but that's exactly my point, Dawkins. You know, the skinless, from everything that we've been reading, the Skinless Cult isn't a group of people that would just say, oh, five people are taking these pieces, let's just let them. Who cares? We got bigger, more important stuff.
We have had a bit of, we had some resistance, but that could just be false resistance. It could just be them
plotting along.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Now the question is, what do we do about this? You know, we've gathered pretty much a lot of information so far, and this is information we didn't have at the beginning. And now that our eyes have been opened and we've been reading these accounts, and in these accounts, we haven't seen anything about this cult going around burning down buildings or anything like that. It's not in their actions. not the way that they work. So
that's a good point.
The question now is, what do we do? We're here on this train. How do we destroy this thing if we're going to destroy it at all?
I think.
And can this thing be destroyed?
Yeah, that's another thing. Everything that they could be that we know could be a lie. It could be a lie to get us to Constantinople, to get it to the mosque, to put it together, and then it awakens. This thing may not be able to be destroyed. So
the question is, what do we do? I mean, perhaps we could find a volcano somewhere and drop it in the volcano.
Yeah, I think that's I like to think that's an option. You know, put it someplace where it's literally impossible for anyone to get to.
Right.
Dump it in the bottom of the ocean. People aren't going to be able to get it. So.
Well, I don't know. I don't trust the ocean for that.
So, I mean, I feel like I'm being paranoid because as the days have gone by, I've become more and more and more paranoid. But as I'm putting this together, it's making more and more sense in my head. I know I brought it up at the beginning when we first got on the train. It seems a little convenient we're taking this to Constantinople, the place where it was made. But now I'm wondering why haven't they done anything?
The other thing too is, there's been several times that our cases have been broken into, but nothing's been taken. So perhaps they were looking to see how many of the pieces we had and just left it alone.
We're just pawns.
Yeah.
So, let's what do we do?
I'll say this. Let's think about what we're going to do. When we get to Belgrade, we'll go into our hotels, we'll meet up, we'll make sure everything's secure, and then we discuss what we're going to do. I say that in public, we look like we're going about our basic business.
Okay.
And give the appearance that we haven't caught on.
Use the hotel safe.
You will be arriving in Belgrade in about 20 minutes.
This train is very efficient.
Well, I'm just saying it. Give you a little bit more time to discuss before you get to Belgrade.
Time flies when you hypothesize.
Okay.
Who's going to handle the knife?
I currently have the knife tucked away. And perhaps, like I said, we can come across some information that might give us wonder. Perhaps we can try something once we get to the hotel. Try something with the knife and the pieces that we have already. See if there's any way the knife might be able to damage or destroy it. I'm trying to remember, because it's been, what, a few weeks since we last read the Image of the Devil. I'm trying to remember if the knife, if when the pieces of the Simrilakam came off because of the knife, is that what happened during the fight with the knights and the that cult leader?
I believe that according to the book, that under the right conditions, with the right angle of light, you could sort of see the simulacrum.
Okay.
As armor, and if you hit it in the right spot,
okay,
it would just fall off.
Okay.
With enough force. But Sedevkar had the Mim Sahis in his hand.
Right. Okay.
I must say, I agree with Dr. Dawkins that I can't help but think that the Mim Sahis is somehow germane to what we will have to do in Constantinople. That it plays a role in destroying the simulacrum.
This is a lot. This is a lot. We're dealing with a lot here. And I kind of like lean forward.
I'm mostly concerned about Dawkins with a knife. Not because you're Dawkins. I don't mean it that way. I mean, because to me, the knife seems the most dangerous at this point.
Well, I say as long as we don't handle it often. I mean, again, we can handle it while we're, you know, doing our investigation and looking into it, check out its properties. But I don't think that anybody should be handling the knife per se.
Perhaps we should
get like a box or something like that to hold it.
Yeah.
We'll take every bit of the precautions that we can.
Yeah.
There was a box, wasn't there? In the archaeological find, we found the box, but it didn't have a knife in it.
I think that was the one in the, it was like attached to the pedestal in the dig site.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, as I've mentioned, my uncle, let's maybe think of home. So when we do get to the station and we're arranging to go to the Hotel Europa, I want to check out the telegraph office, see if there's any news from home.
Tom, can you confirm, or does anybody else remember? We've only had, since this whole trip started, we've only had one communication from Beddoes.
No, there were a number. You're not sure whether they were from Beddoes or from Smythe. However, if they were from Beddoes, they were from Smythe. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or there was one telling you there was
claimed to be Beddoes and Smythe. You mean?
Well, whatever. The first one was something like that the professor was safe. They'd moved him to some veterans thing out in the country that nobody would, you know, find. Something like that. And then there was something about Salzburg, that the texts that they had found there, I think they said they didn't offer any more information.
Yeah, that's the one I remember.
And then it seems to me there were a couple of others. Hold on just one second. Go on with your conversation. I'll answer your question in a moment.
Yeah. It's frustrating because we have no way to contact him. It's
only because he was mentioned and brought it to mind that I haven't heard from him for a while, and it might be worth checking.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I mean, personally, my uncle's one of the few people in the face of the planet I do implicitly trust.
Yeah, I think we need to be careful with that paranoia. I mean, I'm not suggesting you're wrong, Eldridge, but we need to be really careful and like have really strong evidence, I think.
Yeah, and that's the problem, is how can we get strong evidence when there's no communication?
Right, exactly.
But I agree. It's not... We shouldn't treat everything like a lie, but if something odd comes up, we should maybe begin questioning our orders.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, I agree. I mean, especially with what we're dealing with, nobody should be above suspicion. Nobody.
I'm sorry. You've received three telegrams.
Three.
The first one was "Professor in good care. Stop." Godspeed to you, stop. The second one was reviewed Dutchen order documents, stop. Confirmed, statue can only be destroyed when assembled, stop. Needs the Devkar strolls, stop. And the third one was Salzburg, stop. Count Colorado archives, stop. No information, stop. That's it. I believe that's the only ones that you've received so far.
And that they've all been sent to the telegraph office, and when we get and check in, that's when we get that information, right?
Right. That it's at Restant. So it's under your name wherever you are. When you call in, then they can retrieve the message for you.
Okay.
He also can probably guess, you know, where you're going. He knows the route.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so shall we arrive?
Yeah.
The train starts to pull into Belgrade. Belgrade is actually a beautiful city, right on the Danube River. It's a fairly, what you'd say, a fairly modern city, at least as modern as London or Paris at the time. As the train pulls into the station, you can see that there's a lot of hustle and bustle. It's just afternoon. Well, it's almost 1 o'clock. There's just lots of activity going on as you get off the train. Now, the steward informs you that although normally they have porters that can help and assist you, that they don't have set up in Belgrade facilities to transfer your luggage directly from the train to your hotel. So you need to transfer your luggage. You can get people to carry it for you, but you have to make your decision as to which hotel you want and so forth.
Hotel Europa is the best.
So as you exit the train, interrupt me if you want to say anything, okay? As you exit the train, you are, and in part you're carrying most of your luggage with you. You are almost immediately assaulted by young children. I would say, you know, probably in the realm of 10 to 15 years old.
All right.
All of them wanting to grab your luggage and carry it for you.
I immediately begin shouting in Russian for them to shoo, and I kind of put my hands on my tighten my jacket because you never know.
Yeah. So you've been warned about pickpockets and stuff like that.
So
yes. Oliver Twist.
It's extremely chaotic at the moment. There's things going everywhere, and you're afraid that some of your luggage is going to get appropriated. But within the midst of this, a young boy, he's probably about 16, dark hair, he comes rushing forward out of the crowd and starts doing what you're doing, more or less, Eldridge. He starts scolding the boys and chasing them away. And he turns to you and says in English, broken English, he says, let me help you. I will organize this for you. And he just immediately takes charge, starts chasing the kids away, grabbing the luggage, making sure that it all gets put together.
This young chap seems to know what he's doing. You know where the Hotel Europa is, young man?
He's like, well, yes, he says that's a good hotel. The better hotel is the Hotel Moskva. It's only about half a mile from here.
I should turn to my companions. What do you think? Europe is richer.
He seems to speak multiple languages, so he's yelling. Can also tell that he's cursing.
I'll ask them about it. What makes this hotel better?
He says, it's one of the places where all the big shots and the wealthy people go. Go ahead and do a psychology roll.
Really?
Dr. Dawkins.
Really? The worst skill that I have, 60, I didn't pass.
Okay. He seems sincere.
I bet.
Anybody here can do a psychology roll.
I kind of know what's going on.
his uncle owns the place, or works for the place, or something.
Can I do a psychology roll then?
Sure.
Okay. Where in the name of God has my character sheet gone? Oh, there it is. Right. Okay. 66. That's a fail.
Yeah, he seems like he knows what he's doing. He seems well organized, and he's getting all of your. He's managed to recover all of your stuff and put it together in one spot. And
I still like the idea of going to the Europa.
I'm with Keith.
Yes,
this whole business of him coming and shooing away the other kids, that smacks of a setup to me.
I lean down to the boy, and you know, with that stone stoic face
in your happy face.
Yeah, in my happy face. Okay. I say, and if we choose to go to the Europa instead.
Well, he says that's your choice, and he holds out his hand to shake yours, and he says that his name is, he says my name is Peter Riddich.
I straighten up. I shake his hand. I don't have a watch, so don't worry about that.
He immediately elicits the help of a couple other boys about his age to help carry your luggage. But you hear that he's speaking rather fluently Serbian, Croatian, Slovenian, Russian, English. He seems, this is how he probably makes his living for his family. He's a kid.
I would tip him well.
All right. So,
So he gathers your stuff together. And one last thing is, he says, are you sure you don't want the Moskva? It's much, much nicer.
No. We're going to be contacted at the Europa, but I do need to go to where I can get to the telegram office.
Okay, well, the telegram office is right here, so you can just go right over there.
Thanks awfully, old chap.
All right. We'll do that in a moment. You go over to the telegraph office, and there is a telegraph waiting for you, which looks like this.
It's a note from Beddoes that says, "No, really, you can trust me."
Go ahead.
Right, it says to my Berlin friends, we're doing our best to circumnavigate our enemies. Oh my God, it seems to be in some sort of cipher. Any of you?
Read it all.
IDYPHTQJPY MJT DZI. Now have a look at yourself, Keith. I mean, this could be gobbledygook.
It's a telegraph. It seems to be a telegram from Mr. Mixiplix, who says
you might want to wait until you get to the hotel before you have time to sit down and figure
before
it out.
Before we summon a dark deep one.
It looks worse than the Times crossword.
Okay. Did we lose Jeff? What'd you say, Jeff?
I don't think you should have to pay for this telegram. Clearly, there was a mistake in the transmission.
Let me see this. And I kind of hold out for the paper.
I'll hand it over. You can best suit it for you than me, old chap. I can't make head or tail of it.
So I press my glasses up to my eyes, and I hold it up. And I'm going over it, and I give a slight smirk, and I say, it's a cryptograph, appears. So all the...
Because I was right. Yeah, see?
Yeah, all the letters are jumbled up, but the letters that are currently on the page, they sync up. If you look right here, and I point to the fourth... The fourth word, I see double K.
quick.
Yeah, and I say that's the stop. So I is S, C.
Why don't we T? Why don't we do this in the hotel?
Yes, that sounds like a good idea.
And I fold it up and put it in my pocket.
Craving for a cup of tea.
All right. So you had Peter has gotten all your stuff together, and they're now carrying it to the Hotel Europa.
Need to wait, Peter. Good chat.
Hey, Tom, can I interrupt for a second? Are you able to tell us our broadcast okay? We all seem to be having glitchy problems going on.
Looks like we're transmitting fine.
Okay. We're not switching back and forth between us when we talk. We're stationary on one person, even though we're not selected that person.
Yeah. I'm just getting all the thumbnails at the bottom.
I'm showing on the broadcast that we are jumping from person to person.
Okay. I'm seeing person to person, definitely.
If you have clicked on your picture or somebody's picture, then it's going to stick on that picture for you.
If any of you are stuck on me, I do apologize.
Yeah, no, that's what me and Jeff are meeting. Like, we're not selected on anyone.
Okay. You just showed up, though, as the main person on mine.
Yeah.
When you said that.
On mine, I only see Mick.
And on mine, I only see Simon. Like, it goes right back to Simon, even though he's muted. He's smiling now.
That's odd, but I'm looking at the transmission, and it's showing us jumping back and forth. So,
okay, that's good.
Sorry, I'm sorry. This whole thing is glitchy. I don't know what that's about. Yeah.
I just wanted to double check. That's all.
That's cool.
All right. So, you arrive at the Europa about 15 minutes later, and it's a beautiful, beautiful hotel. Very, very ornate, classical. And you can see that, you know, there are other people from the Orient Express that are also staying here, people you recognize from the train. Peter sticks with you to make sure that, you know, you get checked in okay, and that that all of your luggage gets sent up to your correct rooms. And then, you know, he sort of presents himself in front of you at the end, and he says, you know, you all seem like really nice people. If you need anything, if you need a guide, if you need something.
I was just about to ask you, young man, if you're available, because we're going to be tourism, looking about a bit. Are we going to need a guide? Are you going to be here for tomorrow, about 9 o'clock?
9 o'clock tomorrow, I will be here.
I shall tip him generously, and there's more where this comes from.
And he negotiates a price with you, of course.
Ah, we're going to haggle, are we? I see.
You guys settle on a price. he seems quite happy. Just about a pound a day.
Yeah, he's doing well. Nice chat.
See what he says.
No.
A bit late to ask now, isn't it?
He probably makes a comment at some point. If you ask something like that, that he's a Christian, not a Muslim. So,
quite a mixture around here, I believe.
Yeah, huge, huge mixture. Most of the Serbs are Christian. Most of the Croats are Muslim.
I think the Turks. Castle has been destroyed several times through history. The Turks call this the battleground of the faith, I think.
All right, so you go up to your room.
I say it's nice. Oh, can we have the hotel safe for our secure items we need to secure, rather than keep them in
Which
our
Which items would you like to secure? Yes, we do have a safe.
I thought if we could keep them in a hotel safe, as our rooms do have a habit of getting broken into. And a regular occurrence, using the hotel safe might be more diligent.
Sure. We'll say that they have enough room to put anything that you want in there, including, are you going to put the simulacrum in there?
I'm thinking that.
All right. All right, we'll say that so far.
So far, I mean, it's we haven't really had it stolen from us. We had somebody sort of break into our rooms, but never stolen.
It's a matter of course, isn't it? Every hotel we've had so far has been broken into at one point or another.
Yep.
I'd be quite insulted if they didn't break into this one. I might sit up all night and wait for the bastards.
All right. So you guys have secured your items, your valuables, and you are going up to your rooms, which are very nice.
I'll change into my Savile Row suit, I think.
Let's can we before we put something in the safe, can we like transfer two of the statue pieces into one box and then keep like the empty box locked in one of our rooms?
Sure.
So that way, if somebody does break in, we might know it.
You don't. That's frightfully slight, Frank. I like your style. Start calling you fuck.
Do you want to put a little sign inside the trunk that says, ha ha?
Ha ha, up yours.
All right, so you head up to your room, and you are now in your room, and they're very nice. This is the kind of luxury you're used to in Paris.
And I should think so, too. Right. We're getting into good caviar territory, aren't we? The Russian tongue is more common. Hopefully good caviar will be as well. Hey, what?
Did we lose Thomas?
It has gone rather quiet, I think.
He is muted, so maybe he just... Oh, no, he put in the chat, be right back.
Aha. So then, we're going to make our first port of call. I think we should all gather and have a look at this map. I was looking at the tourist guide earlier.
Let me go ahead and pull up the Belgrade map, if you'd like.
Yes, that's a good idea.
I don't see a library mentioned.
Isn't it Eldridge has a thing about libraries?
Eldridge and Dawkins. Dawkins always there gets are in too fact, early.
There are, in fact, two libraries in this city. There is the National Library of Serbia, and there's the University of Belgrade Library.
And what time do they open? That's the most important question.
They
don't say 12 o'clock in the afternoon. What time?
9 o'clock.
Okay.
A.m.
Yeah, 9 o'clock. That's
they're open. Business. They're open till 6.
Because we've got a contact name for the museum, haven't we?
Yes, you have a contact for the museum.
I believe I heard Frank come up with a name for this museum. So we should make up the first port of call in the morning, go to the museum maybe. Any ideas on any other places to check out first day? Oh, I nearly forgot. That telegram.
Right.
Yes, we've got to work out the cipher. Oh, let me see. Eldridge already has, hasn't he?
Yeah, Eldridge is really great with that.
Can we just have a toast too that we also bait it from the train station to the hotel without getting stabbed or shot? Or
I shall get a bottle of bubbly ordered up to the room.
Sure.
Yes, good champagne as well. Bubbly. Not that cheap shit.
Things are looking up in Belgrade. Belgrade.
Belgrade. Yeah.
Depends on which country you're from. Belgrade.
I always know this is Belgrade, but it's seven minutes right. Nice to see the Danube.
The Blue Danube.
Mm-hmm. I know. Dancing man. How do you? Frank.
Do, 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 do.
I'd say, where is Eldridge?
He's had to use the restroom, I guess.
Right here, fool.
We need you to cipher. We forgot about it. We need you to translate it, old chap.
All right. Put the paper on the table. I say, all right. So the important part of solving this is this portion here. And I point to the stop portion, the four-letter section.
Be quick.
I say clearly that's the stop. Okay. So we associate, you know, S with this letter and T with this letter and O with this letter and Q with this letter, which allows us to begin piecing together the other letters in their association. And I kind of go over the semantics of it, mm-hmm. and I say, here's what I've gotten. Simulacrum drains energy. Stop. Illness will grow worse. Stop. Distance from simulacrum magnifies illness. Stop. Death will result unless simulacrum is destroyed. Stop. Those who have left your company are dead. Sorry for involving you. Stop.
I say.
And I look up at the group and I say, so Vigo's dead.
I say, bad show. God, a good egg.
Yeah. His whole life ahead of him.
And the further we can't leave anything behind, the greater distance we put between us and the pieces, the more pain we'll be in, and it will ultimately kill us. So, we're definitely on a train ride that we can't get off the air on.
Like I said, this especially seems a little odd.
Quite depressing.
It's almost like they're saying you can't stop, you can't leave, no matter what, you'll die.
You've got to carry on to the end to stand any chance of survival. And then again, that doesn't guarantee it.
Let me go ahead and do something really quick. I'm going to send this out to everyone in an email. So that way we all have it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Do a idea roll.
Give me one sec. Let me... Beep. There we go. I've just copied and pasted everything over from my pages. There you go. Okay.
Well done, Eldritch, on cracking that so quickly.
Wow. As soon as I saw the four letters, I was like, okay, well, that's stop. Because telegrams have stop. So
your mind shows you why you're the best editor in the business.
No, I just and then I look into the camera and I say, I have a lot of spare time on my hands. and then the canned laughter plays in my head.
Wait, did you just break the fourth wall in an RPG game?
I mean, maybe.
I have to edit this for content.
I don't think so.
Oh, I'm going to take the camera bit.
Idea roll?
Oh, me. Oh, you meant me. Okay, here we go. 65. What is my intelligence? Let me find that. I'm good.
All right. There's something else you can intimate from the telegrams.
Okay.
It seems like on an alternate route that the professor and Beddoes are traveling doing research and sending you information.
Really?
because you got information about Salzburg and information about some German document.
Is it almost like, so are you saying that they're doing something parallel to us now, or they did something before?
It seems like this information is coming as they're getting it. And you know that the original route of the Orient Express went up through Germany, and it went on a higher route.
Kind of wish it kind of still did.
So I bring that up. And I say...
Controversial point.
Well, and what gave you the idea was the first line of this particular telegram.
And that is, where's my pages? Keep losing everything. I'm just going to go to the email. Simulacrum drains energy, stop.
No. The first line of the telegram.
To my burden friends.
To my burden friends.
Well, that's the intro. The line, the first line. Next line.
We are doing our best to circumnavigate our enemies.
So they're still getting attacked, huh?
But that could mean that they're just trying to make sure that the enemies don't get the message.
Mm.
Okay.
I don't know. It's just they know an awful lot about this.
Like I said before, I think they have some sort of occult way of doing it, some sort of form of scrying or something like that.
Well, something else I'd like to remind you of, but you need to do an idea roll again. Huh. How about Frank do the idea roll?
Okay. Go on, Frank.
You better be smart, Frank.
Come on. New dice.
I made it by 4 points.
Oh, that's fine.
That's
you recall, at least as well as you can, it hasn't been that long ago since this whole thing started, that what the professor told you in that room was that the Turks had broken into their house. Well, actually, Beddoes answered the door. They forced their way in. And that they started the fire to torture them, or rather they were using fire to torture them, and that somehow Beddoes had managed to save them. And the house burnt down. They wanted something, they wanted this information that the professor had. And he said something like, thank God that the place burned down, because that way they couldn't get any of the information that he'd already gleaned. He said that he and Beddoes were going to attempt this later. They didn't realize that they were on such a short timetable at this point.
And he was recovering from burns as well with him.
Well, that was, yeah. He was in extreme agony at this point. At least that's what he said.
I'd like to get my hands on the people who did it.
So it might explain the whole house burning thing.
Mm-hmm. I'll share that later.
That's how it's a little memory of that house.
Did you grow up there?
I convalesced there after the war, got some of my sanity back, and helped get my leg back into shape. And that's how I got involved with society. I had nothing better to do, so I just sat in the meetings and got addicted. But I owe everything to him, everything I owe to him. That's true. Should we refresh ourselves for the evening and make a start on the after breakfast tomorrow?
Yeah.
Peter's rendezvousing with us about 9 o'clock, I believe.
Well, it's only 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. Any ideas?
Why don't we just have a quick tour around the city? Just get a feel for the place.
I could bring my camera, take some pictures.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Where would you like to go?
Is there like a, I mean, this city is a modern style city.
Yeah.
Is there like a sort of central plaza area where people gather?
A great marketplace.
There's a great marketplace. There's the Kalemagdan fortress and the gardens. There's, you know, it's a modern place, but remember, it's also still, it's still very international Serbian.
I will say that we should definitely go out, make sure that we haven't been followed, scout the city. This evening we can come back and we can see what this knife does to the similar lacklings, see if it can have any sort of effect on it. Perhaps we have the means to destroy it in our very hands, gentlemen.
Good idea.
It's a smart idea.
Pick a few items up shopping in the Grand Bazaar at the same time.
So is that where you're going to go, to the Grand Bazaar? Is that what you've decided?
Yeah. I think so.
I'll bring my camera.
Being aware of pickpockets, of course.
Okay, we could try to take some evasive action too, like change cabs or something.
Of course. Not a problem. All right, so
I'm going to take my pointiest umbrella with me in case anyone tries to pick my pocket or otherwise manhandle me.
What is the weather like there?
It's chilly, but relatively, you know, okay. It's winter. There is snow in places where the sun tends to not show, you know, the it's accumulated over the past month or so. What you'd typically expect in a city during the winter. But the streets are cleared. I don't know how they do it. I don't know if they salted them at this point or if they have snow plows. I have no idea. But in any case, that's people are getting around. Not any trouble. The sidewalks are swept, cleared of snow. All right. So you go downstairs and you hail a cab. Actually, by now you kind of understand that hailing a cab is the least effective way. You can get the concierge to get you a cab. And that works. Did you guys want to go somewhere and transfer and go somewhere and transfer and then...
Sure. I mean, not crazy, but we'll make some attempt to lose any tail that we might have.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll say that you do that, and you're heading for the bazaar.
Yeah.
All right. You arrive at the bazaar, and it's way over the top. This is obviously an ancient structure. It's probably early Byzantine. The stalls are all permanent. Many of them have tent-like, you know, tops on them. It's everything that you've imagined from every movie that you've ever seen. There's fruit stands and there's food stands and there's things that you can buy and exotica objects. There's shops that sell mystical items that you can't get anywhere else in the world. And there's tobacconists and there's all sorts of things, and there's a fortune teller, and it goes on and on. So do you have any like things that you're looking for?
Oh, I'd like to visit the tobacconist and buy some proper Balkan tobacco blends. Balkan
Sobranje, yeah.
That sounds good.
That very easily.
It'd be quite nice.
And in this culture, it's all haggling. So the prices are way outrageous, but they don't expect you to pay those prices. They expect you to haggle.
I will pay you one penny.
And they just laugh in your face and walk away. No.
All right, then.
That's not haggling. I don't know if that's more or less so. I don't know.
How much are they asking for a nice bin of tobacco?
More than you think that it's worth. I don't know what the prices would be back then, but the tendency in haggling is that you that there's a high price and you say, look, I'll pay you 30% of what you're saying, and they'll be like, oh no, I could never do it for that. And you go up to about 70%. It goes around for a while, and if you are wise, you will walk away. And as you walk away and you get maybe 20 feet away, the merchant will come running up behind you and they'll say, all right, come back. I'll sell it to you for, you know, 20% of what I'm asking for it. Just don't buy it from them.
Infuriating way to live. I mean, it just takes hours to get your shopping done, doesn't it?
But it's kind of fun.
Yeah. Are there any any sort of like mom and pop type shops? Like
they're all mom and pop.
All right.
It's like going to a gigantic swap meet.
Okay. So this place is pretty bizarre.
Yeah. Can you just excuse me a minute while I just have to Google some of the terminology.
Is there anything that sort of stands out? Anything that sort of really stands out?
Well, you know, as you're looking around, one thing that seems intriguing is maybe the fortune teller. You have a lot of very ethnic, different clothing. You have all of these, you know, you have gypsies, and you have, it just seems like one of those very interesting places you might want to go. But there's also shops selling all sorts of stuff.
Okay.
The guidebook says that they have fine weapons.
Yes, you'll find weapons. You will find anything that you can imagine in this place, including people selling artifacts that are, you know, magical, and that's what they claim. Magic mirrors and
stuff. My mother always told me about bazaars when they were in Russia. So this is like, I've been to bazaars before, but a bazaar of this size, I'm sure, is kind of like interesting. So I immediately set out to find, you know, rather nice books that they don't know what they're selling. So I'm just like, yep, I'll take it for 50% of that. This is worth way more than that. Thank you. And I walk away.
Yeah. Now what you're going to find mostly is modern books.
It's modern books, yeah. But there's always a gem. There's always that Turk who's like, come, follow me. And then you go down the alleyway and you're like, what's behind here? And then he opens the door and it's just rugs.
Right. It's rugs. And it's so the noise, the smell of this place is really rather amazing. You know, you can smell food cooking. You can smell incense. You can smell all sorts of things.
Would I be able to find Turkish delights here?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Oh,
lokumia, absolutely.
Hell, aren't you married?
I know, I hesitated saying that.
Do you like Turkish delight? It's delicious.
It's so good. It's really good.
It's basically jellied fruit with powdered sugar on it. Oh, little cubes.
Lovely.
Have you ever had orange wedges? Those candy that's
yeah,
chocolate orange.
It's like that.
It's like that, but they're cubes, and they've got powdered sugar on.
Oh, I never knew that.
They're delicious.
In England, fries make Turkish delight. They make fries Turkish delight.
What?
Oh no, that's not Turkish delight.
That's not the proper stuff.
What you will find amidst the fruit flavors and things like that is there's also a propensity for flower flavored things, rose flavors, and hyacinth flavors,
yes,
and pine flavor. It's quite different than what you're used to, but
if it's a place of Middle Eastern delights, then I'd quite like to buy some halva.
Oh, yeah, man.
Oh, sesame candy? Sure.
Oh, is it the baths in the Turkish district? Yeah,
could I also could I just say that chocolate oranges are available from Rawlinson's on the High Street?
I love chocolate.
Just trying to get in a bit of product placement to see if I can get a few for Christmas.
Oh, in that case, drink teacher's whiskey.
No, I disagree. Drink
a famous drink brand.
Dalwhinnie whiskey. By the barrel.
Make the best cars.
I would like you all to do dexterity rolls.
Oh, boy. Tom and Jeff. Love
oh!
I failed.
42,
I make it. Wow.
31 out of 14.
Who didn't make it?
Thank you.
Y'all made it?
No, I failed.
Rupert. Oh, Rupert?
Yeah, oh, Rupert came across. He's only got 40 dexterity.
Elizabeth's a big woman, but she's graceful.
All right. I would like all of you except Rupert to do spot hidden.
My damn legs are hurting.
More than half. 37 of 45.
That's a pass. Just an ordinary pass.
Dr. Dawkins, you're kind of walking behind Rupert a ways. When you distinctly notice somebody stick their hand in Rupert's pocket and lift something, probably his wallet.
I use my cane to smack that kid's hand.
Okay, you actually...
Or did he do it before I was able to...
Do a brawl, and we'll see if you knock the wallet out of his hand.
I don't have a wallet. Oh, but I got a 10.
Okay, you knocked it right out of his hand, and he looks at you and runs.
I say, thanks very much, Dr. Dawkins. I have to be a bit more careful.
Yeah.
Did the kid look familiar? Did he look
nope.
Quite embarrassing, really.
And there are lots of kids around. You know that they have sticky fingers. So
well, my hands in my pockets.
I've got my purse in my breast pocket, inside breast pocket, and it's got a zip on it.
Okay.
And if anyone goes near my upper torso,
God forbid.
Right hook.
All right.
Not standing for that sort of mishigos.
As you're wandering around, I would like you all to do a spot hidden roll and tell me what your roll is.
Oh, I've got a 1.
I've got a 23 out of 25.
I'm a 21, so I passed.
11.
13.
Holy crap. You guys all got really good rolls.
Even Rupert made it. Yeah.
Best roll I've had tonight, that was.
Even Rupert.
All right. Rupert, what was yours again?
23 out of 25. He only barely made it, but he still made it.
Well, Rupert, you're with the group. You're wandering around. You're looking at stuff and all that. And as you're standing there, you look over, and there is a little shop, you know, a tent, whatever you call it, a stall.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to have different bits and pieces of statuary, things that, you know, they've got a couple of really large full-size statues, but mostly they've got what look like pieces, bits and pieces of... You know, antiquities, things that...
Dr. Keith is definitely into that sort of thing, so I'm going to wander over and give her a shout at the same time.
When you're looking, there's a shelf in the back of the tent, and there is very distinctly an arm. And it looks like it's just about the right size, and shape. Of course, it's a little ways away, but it looks a lot like the simulacrum does when it turns white.
That's a point with my cane, Dr. Key. Can you see that, Keith? That arm in the back of that stool.
Yes, I see it. Put your cane down.
Okay.
Let's go and have a look at it. But
let's go around behind it.
Well, there's a way of doing things in these shops. You have to go in and look at something else.
Okay.
Well, there's not really going in. There's tables in front with stuff laid out on them, and there's the proprietors inside, and the shelf is behind him in the back.
Well, Dr. Keith knows her archaeology because I journeyed around Europe with her. She knows her stuff. So if it is historic stuff here, she is going to understand what it is and can probably strike a conversation up. Mm-hmm. This is Byzantine.
Yes, I shall do just that. I shall just ask... I'll just start asking questions.
Yes, of course. What can I do for you?
I just wondered if you could tell me about this piece, and I'll just randomly pick up a piece and engage him in.
Oh yes, this is very, very ancient Byzantine piece of art. It was found in a local dig, and it is 20 pounds. I believe you are English. Yes, it's 20 pounds.
I'm going to make an archaeology roll, please, and assess what he's just told me about the piece in question.
I can do an appraisal if necessary.
Which is 28 out of 40. That's a success.
All right. You're incredulous as to whether this is actually an ancient piece or whether it is a copy. You know, it looks a little not weathered enough to be ancient. However, there are a few pieces on the table that could be old enough, you know, that they look like they could be. Looks like he's got quite a collection.
I'll just things. Start. I'd like to browse, if I may, and I'll just start.
What are you looking for?
Well, we're doing the grand tour. It'd be nice to take some fragments of an antiquity back with us. I'll just start picking up.
Yes.
The pieces that look authentic to me, and only those ones.
Oh yes,
and examining them.
Yes. Some fascinating pieces.
Yes, yes. Whatever you like, we can have it. We can have it wrapped up and sent to your hotel.
I'll take my time and browse.
If you like that piece, I will make you a deal on that piece. If you like, I will give it to you for, you know, 50 pounds. That is a good price.
50. 30.
What about the items behind you on the shelf? Are they older items, or are they things that are sold?
No, it says no. Which would you like to see?
I'll select something that isn't the arm.
Okay. What is this strange thing here? Yeah, look at this. It's very strange. And he holds it up, and it's some bas relief of...
That is unusual.
You know, little children dancing or something like that. It's like, yes, it's very nice. I can give this, I can make you a deal on this, so you can give it for you for, you know.
Well, it's very nice, but I'm afraid it's not really the right shape. I had a spot on the mantelpiece in mind for some sort of keepsake of our trip.
Oh yeah, it's so cool.
Let me just
we have this over here. You can see this.
That arm up there. Could I have a look at that? That looks about the right kind of.
You want part of a statue, or something.
Of course. And he grabs it and he brings it down, and just as he is bringing it forward for you to look at, there is a man standing next to you. Remember, it's crowded. There's people everywhere. There is a man, and he has a big bushy mustache. He looks like he might be of Middle Eastern descent. He just grabs it and runs through the crowd.
Can I do anything to stop him?
Well, and immediately he's like, thief, thief, stop him, stop him.
Is there anything I can do? Because I'm at the store as well, so if I can get a blow on him or something to stop him, maybe trip him up.
It happened so fast, he's beyond your reach. However, he is running.
Let's run after him. Let's be the heroes.
I'm not really a runner, so I just want to stand about.
Okay. So who's chasing after him?
I'll give chase.
I'm going to try and keep up, but I will be very fast.
All right.
Waving my umbrella.
His, as he runs away from you, he actually is grabbing people by the scruff of the neck and pulling them so that they stumble between you and him as he's running with this arm.
I shall simply plow through them with my prodigious bulk.
Okay.
and I'm following in her wake.
All right. You can now also see that three or four other store owners or their assistants have taken up the chase as well. You know, they all work together next to each other. So, but the guy is sprinting. He's jumping over things. He's pushing people out of the way. He's causing them to, hit the proverbial orange cart, which spills the oranges onto the ground and everybody has to duck. And, this goes on. You guys chase him down the street. And, of course, there's a huge crowd. So he's shoving through people and everything else. And ultimately, he comes to a stop. He turns a corner, and the crowd, which seems some of them are angry that they've been pushed. Some of them are kind of amused because it doesn't happen every day. But, hell, it's happening now, and it's kind of like out of a pulp novel. It's crazy. You guys all chasing after. He's knocking things over. People are angry. They're screaming. But as he turns a corner, he suddenly is confronted by a kind of a circle of people that is sort of formed because people are wanting to know what's going on. And he finds himself kind of corralled. He's corralled in this circle of people who are all angry, and they're not going to let him go. But you guys have a clear view to get to him, and he stops in his tracks and he turns around and he looks at you, and he looks nervous at first, and then he suddenly has a rather devilish sort of smile, as he's standing there staring at you with this thing in his hand. So what do you guys do?
I am going to enter the on guard position with my umbrella.
Okay. He sort of waves his hand like this, and he's got the thing in his hand, and he smiles, and he starts walking towards you. What are you gonna do?
Well, I have my hand on my cane.
You guys
are all there now.
I'm absolutely ready to clout him.
Okay.
I'm almost there.
Well, just as he starts to come up towards you, he takes the arm and he swings it at you, probably in the hopes that you will all jump and duck, and then he can run some more.
I'm going to parry with my umbrella.
Okay, go ahead and do a... I guess that's more like... Is that a dodge, shall we call it?
Formally.
And my dodge is 20. Good God. Okay.
So he swings it and you deftly miss it. What does anybody else want to do with this guy?
Can I try to smack him in the head with my cane?
Sure.
Let's see, this is a brawl. Right.
And he's swinging
22 out of 25.
Okay. You smack him. You don't smack him hard, but you smack him. And now he looks, the smile's gone from his face, and he's seriously swinging this thing like a baseball bat. How about Eldridge? What are you doing?
I assumed that I was still looking for books, but I'm apparently there.
Oh. Yeah,
I can be there. Okay.
So it's Frank.
I overheard everything, and we're there. Okay. Well, let's see what I can do. I'm going to bull rush and tack him to the ground.
All right. Go ahead.
35 out of 60.
He got a 17. I believe he very deftly leaped as you dove, and you missed him. And he swings around with the arms still trying to hit anybody that's coming out. There's other people trying to.
Yeah.
How about Frank?
If I can arrive on time, I'll punch the Dahlia first.
I'm actually too cautious about my cameras getting damaged, so I've got my camera in my left hand and my bag of Turkish Delights in my right hand.
Oh, God.
And I'm kind of like,
hold my cane, Frank.
Eating the Turkish Delights.
And, right.
Well, how about Elizabeth? What are you doing?
I am going to clout him with my umbrella as hard as I possibly can.
All right. Mm.
98.
And he got an 86. So you both swung. Neither of you hit. Not Rupert yet. Your Rupert would take you a while to get there.
So, yeah.
Dr. Dawkins.
Can I try to trip him?
Sure.
All right. Let's see if I can get this. Been rolling all right today, but let's see. 26 out of 25, so I just missed.
Okay. You try to trip him, and he swings the thing at you and misses. Eldridge.
Okay. Because I'm on the ground, I'm going to ball my fist and wham right into his thigh. I'm going to give him a nasty Charlie horse.
Okay. Go ahead. Brawl.
Okay, 44 out of 60. Pass.
Okay.
If we still had Vigo with us, he'd point out that in Italian, Charlie Horse is crampe alla gambe.
All right. You punch him square in the thigh. At the same time, he's swinging this thing down at you. And as you hit him, the arm comes and hits you right in the head. But as it does, it shatters into a million pieces of what look like porcelain or something like that. And the crowd at this point grab him. And you suddenly hear whistles from the police. And before anything happens, there are a couple of people, including the proprietor from the arm place, that sort of grabs a hold of you. And he says, "You don't want to get in trouble with the police. Come."
Peace out.
He pulls you away. And that's where we will end it.
Just go to the other.
All right.
Oh, man. All right. Action packed. Indiana Jones.
Our players included Thomas McKeon, Mick Swan, Simon Ward, Jeff Wilkins, and Wayne Worthy, with myself as the Keeper of the Secrets. Please consider visiting our Patreon account. Just a few dollars a month will help us greatly. We are currently producing 4 shows a week with music and sound effects added in post-production in order to create a richer listener experience. We're also providing audio-only versions of our show, free for you to download from Podbean or iTunes. Like, share, and subscribe to our channel for updates on our latest shows, and leave us some comments. We love hearing from you. You'll find links to everything I mentioned in the description below. This is Tom Rayleigh, together with all the members of our gaming group, inviting you to journey with us once again into the darkness for another adventure into the universe of H.P. Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. Until next time, good luck and good gaming.